You're listening to the Christian Indie Artist and Songwriters Podcast, the place where faith, music, and life intersect. We exist to help Christian indie artists and songwriters just like you get songs heard. Hey, I'm here with my good friend Todd Fields, coming to us live from Georgia. How's it this morning in Georgia, Todd?
Good, man. Fall is finally here, and it's my favorite time of the year. I don't know about you guys. It's awesome.
You know, we call it Florida fall, which basically means there are some leaves in the ground. But beyond that, I mean, it was in the 60s early today. So for us, that is pretty chilly. We're going to do the pumpkin patch thing on Thursday night with the kids. So it's as fall as we can get, right?
They've already got Christmas trees up at Home Depot, which is crazy.
Yeah, we were in Lowe's maybe, honestly, 3 or 4 weeks ago, and they have a huge Christmas display, but then also Halloween display. So it's a true sense of good and evil.
Unbelievable. Oh, yeah. That's
hilarious. And man, we met through the incredible worship circle through our mutual friend, Aaron Hoskins, just a mighty man of God. And
love you, Aaron.
Honestly, you know, ever since then, I feel like that was a major shift in my family's life. So just thankful for that experience. But I know that's not where the journey started for you. So kind of where did you begin your music journey? Where did it all start?
Man, it goes back really a long way because music really impacted me from a young age. It's funny, even now I'm 52 years old, but so much of the soundtrack of my life and memories of my life are tied to songs versus other things, you know?
Yeah.
I know for some people, you know, the sense of smell triggers memory, and other people, you know, locations and stuff, but literally I can hear the Carpenters or, you know, Mamas and Papas, some of the stuff I grew up on. And it immediately takes me back to the car seat days, driving around in my parents' car and kind of hearing those melodies and feeling something inside. And it was just, music was just always a part of our family's life. And we were, you know, I grew up in the church. It was choir and orchestra at sometimes, but there was this guy playing acoustic guitar in my elementary days, in the early days, like first grade, kindergarten. And I just remember thinking, wow, that's so cool. He's able to just take an acoustic guitar and get all these people singing in a room, you know? And back then the songs were like, I Am a Sea and Father Abraham and all the kind of all the goofy stuff that was really before the praise and worship movement. And it was kind of the Jesus movement back then. But so I remembered that guy playing, and it impacted me. And, you know, as I moved on in my journey, my grandmother played piano, my aunt played piano, my mom played clarinet, my dad played trumpet, just always around music. But it really wasn't until ninth grade when I decided to start playing an instrument. My dad had an old Yamaha folk guitar. And I remember when I was a kid, he would play, you know, songs on it from time to time. And I thought it was a really cool instrument, but I'd never thought about playing it. And what made me pick it up to play, Brian, is that I heard the song Beat It by Michael Jackson. I remember hearing Eddie Van Halen's guitar solo in there, and I just was like, I don't know what he's doing, but that's the coolest thing I've ever heard, and I want to do that.
Man, yes.
And you couldn't do that on a classical folk guitar, but, you know, I did go to my dad, and I said, hey, I want to learn to play this thing, and he showed me a few things, but he paid for me to have a few months of folk guitar lessons. I learned some finger picking stuff, Bob Dylan songs, John Denver, a guy named Ben Champion in Lawrenceville, Georgia. I just remember going to his house on the weekends and woodshedding and doing my homework. And I couldn't wait to go back every weekend to show him what I had learned and that I did it right, you know?
Yeah.
So I took the guitar thing seriously, played all the time when I got home from school. And I'd really dreamed of being, I just wanted to be as good as I could be. Intersected with church world, we started attending a church called First Baptist Atlanta, where Andy Stanley was the youth pastor. And he was inviting some kids to be involved if they wanted to be in like a, you know, a band for the youth group. And so my parents encouraged me to audition. I did, and like a week later, I was on stage playing in front of my peers through my Tom Scholz Rock Man with my, you know, Kramer guitar.
Rocking out for the Lord, man. Nothing
rocking
wrong with that.
For the Lord. And it was cool, Brian, because it was like, hey, I can do something. It was the beginning of me understanding like that there's no such thing as sacred and secular. It's either consecrated or desecrated. And anything that we learn and do for the glory of God with thanksgiving, even if it comes from what we normally call secular channels, God can be praised through that and honored through it. So he was taking my love for guitar through all my Van Halen practicing, integrating it in the church world. And I just loved playing guitar and did that for like 4 years all the way through high school at First Baptist. graduated there, continued to play in that band through college. And I just had a blast doing that, man. I think my path changed a little bit. I got invited to go on a mission trip with Operation Mobilization. Once the Iron Curtain kind of came down in Russia and the Berlin Wall came down, people were going on mission trips to Russia. And I was invited to go play guitar over there with a band they put together. And once again, I said, okay, I don't know what I'm doing, but here we go. And it, man, it was over there in Germany. It was in Nuremberg. We had this thing called a Congress, where it was about 5,000 international students who had come on an evangelistic crusade to share Jesus with people in Russia and all over Europe. And there's this little British guy on stage leading worship, and his name's Graham Kendrick. I didn't know who Graham was at the time. All I knew is that, man, he had some really cool songs with new melodies, and I'd never been exposed to any new music, worship music. So that was right after I graduated college, and I was just blown away by the power of worship. After that, I met my wife, Carrie, at about the same time that I got involved with the Billy Graham Association.
Okay.
And I had started writing songs a little bit before that, man. I'd started in the youth band and given it my best shot. And I didn't really know what I was doing. It was fun. And I didn't write a ton, but when I came out with one, it was honest and as best I knew how, did what I know to do. And somewhere, this is where the story kind of collides with, I was doing Billy Graham, but I also, Louis Giglio moved from Texas. He was doing Choice Ministries at Baylor University. And he moved to Georgia. His dad was ill, and he and Shelly moved to Georgia, and we did a Bible study called 722. And that was crazy. We had a few thousand singles coming, you know, every week to just worship the Lord and make a big deal out of Jesus and the cross and the resurrection and his glory and his fame. And I was kind of introduced to that whole concept around the same time I was with the Graham team. We would go off and do these crusades all around the North America, Canada, and just share Jesus through this vehicle that Billy had been doing for years with a guy named Ralph Bell. And I remember I'd done some writing, I'd recorded some albums, but I was on one of the crusade trips. And I think, you know, this was a really cool point for me in writing. I remember making a conscious decision when I was on the road for this last crusade that I was doing with them. I'd heard Billy Graham, when he went into a hotel room, would unplug the cable from the wall for the TV. And he would go to the front desk and say, "Can you keep this while I'm here?"
Wow.
And he just didn't want any access to stuff. He just wanted to kind of consecrate the room and say, "Hey, I'm going to focus on what I'm here to do and be present with the Lord in the midst of this task he's called me to." So this is the first time and only time I did that. And I remember doing it, and I had my guitar with me all week, and we were doing rehearsals and stuff. But this one day, I was just really crying out to God, saying, "Lord, I want to say some things that I'm sensing in my heart," and wrote a few songs that day. Like three of them came to me.
Wow.
And they ended up being pretty impactful songs for a lot of people. And it was the peak of God going, "Hey, if you know, kind of stop trying so hard and just be present with me, I'm with you. And it's going to be me saying some things through you, and the things that you're going to, you know, write are going to be coming from an honest place." So that was kind of my first dab at connecting to what would later become, you know, a joy, which was to write more and more. So started writing, you know, back in the day, and put out a bunch of CDs, Brian, over the years while I was working at North Point. You know, with Louis coming on board and Passion and all that stuff, we were writing more praise songs. And I think my direction kind of ultimately headed in that area. And North Point started a record label. And so much of my writing, you know, in those years, for gosh, about 8 to 10 years, was trying to write worship songs for the church.
Mm.
And had some semi-success with that, with songs that were memorable and singable. And my friend Steve Fee was part of that. And it was fun. But I, you know, when I started Worship Circle, which was in 2014, I had really been through a point in my life where I had been working so hard in the church. I think no one had really asked me how my heart was doing. You know, it was all about being present in meetings and programming services and planning things and writing things. And I don't think I'd slowed down enough to kind of, you know, just be present with the Lord. I didn't even know what that was like. Wow. I mean, I would say I had my quiet time, but it was more than that. So God just met me in a really powerful way in 2014, 2013. And at that point, you know, I wasn't writing anymore once that happened. And once I started Worship Circle, I kind of put it on the side. I wasn't trying to be as intentional as I had about it. And I definitely wasn't trying to write worship songs because I wasn't at North Point anymore. All of that to say, I remember when Pat Barrett came on our Worship Circle team, I remember interviewing Pat and he said, write songs that you need to hear. Mm. And I was like, wow, never heard that concept.
Yeah.
Instead of trying to write songs that you think people will like, write something that you need to carry with you that's going to help you. Mm. And so, you know, over the past 5 years, that's kind of been what I've been doing, but they've come out not out of practice and just like, I have to write 10 songs this month. I don't have a quota or anything. They're just songs that have popped out on my journey that I've needed to write just to have something to remind myself that it's going to be okay. You know? So yeah, started Worship Circle. We're almost 8 years in. We're mentoring worship leaders in the small group and giving them a safe place to be known and seen and cared for. And we really care a lot about helping leaders who are in the machine of church and the constant doing pause for a season just to be present to themselves and to God and just ask some questions about what they really want for their life and, you know, be able to hear from him in a way that's special.
No, that's great. So definitely a lot of extra questions pop up along the way. But one thing I wanted to ask is, as you were recording, writing those initial records, was that all independently?
Yes, it was. I started, you know, my dad funded my first project, like gave me a loan and I paid him back. That was like in 1993. And then, you know, after that same kind of deal, I got a loan at a bank. It was crazy back in the day. And I had such an audience with youth camps and stuff that back then you could sell CDs and you could make money.
Right.
So I would make a record, then I'd take out this loan, pay it back. And then at some point while I was at North Point, I remember meeting with Andy, my pastor, just about my desire to write and record. And he said, Todd, you're on the road all the time doing these youth camps and, you know, you really have this music ministry going and that's what it is. So he just said, what if you set up a nonprofit ministry where, you know, people who believe in what you're doing with music could give and support you? And that's what we did. And, you know, for the last four albums after that, that's how we funded stuff. People would donate and sponsor the project. It was kind of like Kickstarter before there was Kickstarter.
Yeah.
But it was all ministry based. And then when the album would come out, you know, we would sell them at North Point. And then when I'd go out to play, I'd take CDs and sell them. So it was a way to keep the songwriting going, the ministry going, and support my family back in the day, you know, for quite a while until the streaming things started happening, and then things changed, you know.
So were you co-writing any of those songs, or was that kind of all stemming from you initially?
I wasn't co-writing for a while, and I'm glad I learned that whole art, and I'm glad that people pushed me in that direction. Kind of a crazy thing happened. Passion City Church started about 12 years ago, and my friends Nathan and Christy Knuckles moved from Nashville down to like a couple miles from us. Mm. And then Matt Redman, of all people, moved about a mile down the street from me.
Wow.
And then Chris Tomlin was like 15 minutes away. So I had all these, you know, these amazing brothers and sisters in the area that were great songwriters. And so I started thinking, well, this would be stupid for me not to at least attempt some co-writes. And, I remember, you know, writing at Matt's house, we wrote a song together on a self-titled album I came out with when I was 40. So it was 12 years ago, and then Nathan and Christy helped me with a song. But I think the first song I ever co-wrote was called Breathe On Me. And I remember writing the song and starting in my basement when our boys were little. And those of you who write with small kids will crack up because every little like song idea blurb I had on my mini disc player back then had little kids, had my boys either fighting or screaming or laughing. And If I go back and listen to any of that stuff, it just immediately takes me back. But I just remember this Breathe On Me song. It had something on it, Brian, you know, and you write so many songs, and then sometimes you just stumble on something that, where there's, it bypasses all the thinking and goes straight from the heart. And it, when people hear it, and even when you listen back, you're like, man, that's special. Something that's moving me.
Yeah.
And, I remember just inviting Nathan and Christy into that song. It was the first time I had asked anybody to co-write with me, but I trusted them because I loved their songs and their music. And it was kind of a dream, like, man, if Nate and Christy would write with me, this could be special. And it ended up being amazing. Christy wrote verse two. We just kept tweaking that song. And it was one of the songs that I'm most proud of just in my life. I listened back to it and I'm just like, okay, that one's going to stand, you know?
Yeah.
Out of all the 10, I haven't written hundreds of songs, but I know there's been over 100, but,
yeah,
so it opened my eyes and heart to being open-handed with things creatively and not feeling like I had to make a statement on my own and it all had to come from me. It was like this could be a special process if I invite the right people into it. Wow. But you got to be careful, man. When you sit down and you start on something that's an unveiling of something that's going on in your heart, it's very intimate for you. And you don't just throw that out there to anybody, you know? So it's important, I think, to be able to trust and respect the person that you invite into that process. And the one thing I remember Redmond said to me that I loved, he goes, mate, before we start writing, if you get away from this and you hate all of it, you don't have to use any of it. I just remembered how graceful and how awesome and loving that was. Because sometimes you'll do a co-write with somebody and you'll get done and you'll be like, well, it's not exactly what I thought it was going to be. And it's okay. And then you live with it. And, you know, sometimes it's just not what it's not moving you. And I think it's really good when you're riding with somebody, just to always keep the door open to, we're not going to lock any of this down to our, you know, our self-worth.
Yeah.
This is, you know, if you use this verse, great. If it doesn't work out, that's fine. If the chorus needs to change direction, great. If not, it's fine. It's like giving each other permission and freedom to let the song win in the end, you know?
Mm. Yeah, I always say, like, the co-write is about the hang and the relationship and the community. Yeah. The song is the souvenir. And you always want a great souvenir, but it's not the main point of it, right? It's the ministry aspect. I always look at co-writes like it's church service, 3-hour church service usually.
Yeah. Yeah, man. It's special to sit down with people. And I remember writing with a guy named Michael Farron up in Nashville, and with a friend of mine named Jessica Campbell, who put that write together, and I had written a Christmas song and went up to Michael's house, and we felt really good about the direction of the song. We didn't have a chorus yet, you know? And it's funny because every time I go to the bathroom in the middle of a co-write, I come up with something.
Yeah.
And it's like, I had to go to the bathroom and I just met Michael, and I could tell man, this guy does this all the time. He's just like, let's get this done. And he's moving around with melody and,
oh yeah,
Jessica's sitting there, and I come back from the bathroom and I've got this chorus in my head, and he's like, that's it. And, like, you know, we start knocking it out, and then he adds to it. And it's such a cool process when you're doing it with people you respect. And
yeah, I've had the privilege to write with Farron a few times too.
Yeah.
And like, it's just like, he'll just sit there and all of a sudden just this chorus comes out. I was like, where does that come from? You know, he's just so, but that's like his gift, is that spontaneous, like, glory pours out, you know? So yeah, I'm sure as soon as you brought out that chorus idea, but that's the power of co-writing. And like you said, though, it's like a safe environment. It's not just about like, okay, I'm going to try to write with people because I know that they'll make me a good song. It's like, no, it's like, I believe that what we're going to do together is important and matters, but like the freedom that Matt Redmond gave you is like, but it doesn't have, you don't have to live with it. You can just enjoy what it is. And then of course you hope that it will go further, because I mean, we write songs to impact people, you know? So that's a big part of it. But yeah, I think that's really smart. And it takes a certain level of discipline to like consider what might be the best for the song, you know, because there's so many considerations with the co-write, you know, there's so many things that you could think about. But I love that idea of like the Breathe On Me song, like you had you knew that they were the people that would be like the dream scenario for that moment.
Yeah.
And now it's one of your proudest moments as a writer, you know, which is amazing that God led you to that, because not everybody can do that, right? Some people are just like, I don't write with them because I think they're, you know, cool or whatever, their position in the industry or whatever. Like, that might be fun for the moment, but it doesn't have any life to that. But this song will always be like one of your things. So, man, so many things. I mean, I want to talk about Worship Circle. I want you to kind of unveil that, but I feel like we're on the song journey now. So, man, like, I just saw your post about you're working on new music. So, man, fill me in and fill anyone in listening about that.
Well, it's new to people that are seeing the post, but, you know, it's funny. The past 5 years, I really haven't had any discipline of sitting down to write, but, you know, our family's been through a lot. I've been through a lot just in my journey with allowing God to prune me. And, we were talking before the, you know, we rolled the podcast, this idea of our death being beautiful to God and us not being in control is the way he wants it, because he's in control. And so, you know, Brian, it's like, I think for therapy of just continued healing in my own life, I was like, I think it's time to record. And it wasn't that I had a gazillion songs. I had, you know, I think there's seven, or six songs with words that I had. One of them I'd written a while back called Love Come Down that North Point recorded. And that song was fun. And I just needed to put a different spin on it. I've always been a fan of hymns. We did the Worship Circle Hymns project. And a while back, a few years ago, I was sitting in my office and messing with the acoustic, came up with a really cool progression that fit the hymn, 'Tis So Sweet to Trust in Jesus. And then there was four other songs that were just really raw and songs that I wrote because I had to write them in the season I was in. And one was a kind of a medium tempo worship thing that Steve Fee helped me finish in Nashville. And that song, it's called I Will Praise You / You Won't Let Me Go. It's one of those two title.
Yeah.
But I wrote it, and it's one of these where my youngest son, Colin, who's 17 now, he plays guitar, and this rarely happens. It has happened for me, but he would like 2 years ago say, Dad, when are you going to record that? You know?
Wow.
And I was like, what do you mean? He goes, I want to hear that. Like, I want to carry that with me.
Wow.
And Brian, to have your kid,
man,
go that song. And then he goes, Dad, other people need that right now. And I was going, okay. So I started playing this out at men's retreats and different places I would lead, and people would go, hey, where can I get that?
Wow.
And it's one of those things where you're going, I never set out to do that. It just, I wrote something that I was in a really rough spot in a valley in my life. God used it to remind me of his love and his faithfulness. And for some reason, it's helping other people. That song happened that way. There's another tune called Let Your Kingdom Come. I went up to write with Nate and Christy, again, just trusting their ear and their heart. And we've become, you know, even closer friends with them over the years. I played about three or four songs, and immediately Christy goes, that one.
Wow.
And it didn't have a chorus. It just had this really cool finger-picking, kind of haunting verse pattern. And I had written a verse. Nathan's the one that he just gets it. He's like, okay, this chorus needs to do this. And he crafts the melody. And then I went to the bathroom and I came back.
There it goes.
I came back with this, Let Your Kingdom Come on Earth as it is above. And Christy helped with some lyric stuff. And it's, anyway, we wrapped that one up, ended up recording that one. But man, yeah, it's cool because it's like I'm writing now, not because I'm under pressure from a label or to try to compete with anybody else for worship, whatever. It's literally just, God, this is life-giving for me now, and I'm at peace. The other piece about this, Brian, that's huge that I want your listeners to hear, and I think God's really bearing down on me with this idea, is that he didn't make a mistake when he made you. He didn't make a mistake when he created your voice the way he did. He didn't make a mistake when he gave you the likes for certain styles of music and a lane that you run in, that when people hear you do that, they go, that's you. That's easy for you. Like, and so I think for me, a lot of my years of leading and trying to write worship songs, I don't doubt that there was some fruit to that. But in my core, I sometimes felt like I was not being my truest self with what was easy for me and what was coming directly from my heart. I think Breathe On Me was that, but there was other times where it was just like, hey, we need a song and this can work, you know? Mm-hmm. But for this next project coming up, it's just going to be me. It's going to be called Finding Me.
Wow.
And, it's not like necessarily a worship album, but although I think you can worship with it, it's going to be a lot more from the heart and acoustic. And I'm going to put a couple of acoustic guitar instrumentals on there, 'cause I like to play acoustic guitar instrumentals, and
yeah,
I'm going to be unapologetic about this is what I like. This is where it came from and here it is. And there's no pressure,
man. I mean, I feel like that is the purpose, the actual intent of songwriting.
Yeah.
Is what you're doing. It's not about the pressures. I mean, you know, music business, that means there's some exchange of money, or else it's not music business, it's just music. But like, yeah, when you get to like your son, well, I mean, what a gift that is, that
yeah,
your own flesh and blood recognizes something in this way outside. 'Cause obviously like, oh yeah, dad wrote another song, but like obviously it was, and then it keeps going and it'll continue to go through the project. But for you to,
yeah,
it's not like you're doing it 'cause you want the dopamine rush from people liking it on Spotify. It's like, yeah, you're doing it because you need to do it. And like,
yeah,
the burden is there. And I feel like, honestly, I feel like, I don't know, I've never really verbalized this, but I feel like, I know for me, there's a burden where I have to do,
yeah,
it. And if I don't, like, I feel that tug. And it's kind of like what you were saying, like when you were doing the North Point thing, like you wrote for that, you know, but now, yeah, you're not doing that. Before that, you wrote for that, you know, and now, yeah, it's like you're running for the season based on the experiences you have to share with others, instead, yeah, of it being like, so it's just, as a songwriter, songs are an extension of us, right? I mean,
they, like, are, yeah.
It's just like, when I was in a country band, guess what kind of songs I wrote? Country songs, you know? When I had little kids, I wrote kids songs. Like, that's just, I feel like that's how we're wired as a writer, that you'll never not do that. I always say, even though it's a little dark, it's like, I feel like I'll probably be working on a melody line, like when I take my last breath, just because that's what I do, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I can't not do it. So I love that that's the foundation of this new project you're working on. It's just these honest songs that,
yeah,
need to be heard because they're going to resonate with people, right?
Yeah, man. I think for me, you know, we live in this world where you look at how many streams you've had at the end of the year and, mm-hmm, all this stuff. And I'm not saying this and blowing smoke. Like, to have my son Colin say, "Dad, can I have that song?" I don't care how many streams. You can give me 5 streams. I don't care. I'm done.
Yeah. Like,
I don't care about any of that stuff anymore. And I think the Lord has shown me that his math is so different than ours.
Oh, man.
It's like, I've said this before, but like, I don't think the math of heaven and earth are the same. I think Jesus, he moved slowly. He spent a lot of time alone with the Father. And he was very intentional about being very present to the few people that he was present with. And I think the kingdom impact we have, we leave all that other stuff to him, and his math is more like this. Brian, you could have 1 million streams this month with a song, and it's the same in my economy as 5 people that you touch deeply. And it just is something that they carry with them that changes the trajectory of their family.
Wow.
That's his math is not like, it's not Spotify math. It's like,
yeah, yeah.
And so at 52 and writing songs, like, I've got friends coming up going, "Man, when can I get a copy of that?" And I know one guy's going through chemotherapy and cancer right now. And I'm like, if I only did this album for my friend, it would have been 100%. I'm done. Like, that's all it needed to be. And I don't think I could always say that, because so much of what I did was tied to the success of the songs and all that. And I get that. And I know for a lot of people that are songwriters, it's hard to differentiate from that and pull away from that because your livelihood depends on it. But
yeah,
it's just good to be in that spot right now.
Yeah. I mean, when you're talking about, you know, budgets and you have, you know, essentially investors, supporters, and you look about return on investment, and that math is there, right? So like, for you to be, I mean, I have a, I wrote a song in Nashville with some friends. It was like a three, it was like a conference, actually Michael Farron's conference, Kingdom Songs, a few years ago. And the second day of that retreat was always like the long day. It was like 8 a.m. And then we'd start the third co-write of the day at like 8 p.m. So it was like this, but we, it was me and three guys. We wrote this song. There was a guy in the group that like he had a church member who was going through cancer. So we wrote this song for her. And what happened is she actually never made it out of the hospital, but the husband would play this song, the demo that we did, over and over again. Wow. And like they ended up playing it at her service.
Yeah.
And like it doesn't have streams, you know, but but who cares? Like I remember like bawling when he wrote us that. I was like,
yeah,
if I never do another song again, like that's worth it. You know?
It is.
I mean that and so I was thinking too, like talking about God's math is different than ours. Like, sure, a million streams impacting five people, but one person with no streams is just as valuable in God math, right?
Man, it's crazy because you're saying that. And Amy Grant had a song years ago called It's Not a Song. Mm. Have you ever heard of that?
I think I have, yeah.
Like the lyric is, it's not a song till it touches your heart. It's not a song till it tears you apart. When what is left of what's right and what's wrong till it gets through to you, it's not a song. And
wow,
I think that if we'll take our eyes off the and take the pressure off of, you know, I mean we've all been guilty of this. I'll start writing something, I'm like, this is the one, like oh my gosh, this is going to be the one that sends my kids to college, and this is going to be the one that allows us to upgrade the house and all this stuff. Oh my, I mean, the world's never heard anything like this. This is amazing. The stars are aligning. And then, and then you play it for somebody and they're like, yeah, it's all right. Okay. Next.
Like what?
You're like, I'm terrible. But I think the more we're true to ourselves and the more we take the pressure off of having to prove ourselves to anyone other than just, man, do I need this? And is this helping me? Mm. Is this taking me somewhere? And is it true to who I really am as a writer and as a singer and as an artist? Then you can't go wrong with that, man. People can tell.
Yeah.
And I think the world, in a world of like cut and paste and copy and paste and same chord progression and all that stuff that goes on in production, it's like when you find somebody who is, doesn't care anymore and they're just themselves, those are the ones that everybody goes, what's that?
Mm.
That just sounds like you're 100% at peace.
Yeah.
You're just doing what you like to do. And I think those are the artists that end up being the ones that everybody gravitates toward.
Wow.
It's not like, hey, let's try to sound like this. No, don't do that. Try to sound like you. And I posted this on Worship Circle the other day, Brian. I got to bring it up because this is part of this conversation. But Miles Davis, famous trumpet player. This is from him. It takes a long time to sound like yourself.
Wow.
And I think that it's taken me my whole life to sound like myself.
Mm.
And a lot of it is letting go of the entrapment of what expectations you put on yourself that you think other people need you to be so you'll be successful, and taking a deep breath and resting in God's arms and knowing He has you and He didn't make a mistake when He created the things you like and the things you want to do, and it's all from Him.
Man, I just watched a sermon a couple weeks ago, and it was all about finding contentment in every season.
Yeah.
And I feel like that's kind of what we're talking about here. It's like, yeah, the songs may not. And the ironic part, though, of course, is that when you actually let go of that, that's when they start doing something.
I know. Exactly.
It's such a like double entendre or whatever the word would be. You know, it's like if you let go, you have freedom.
Yeah.
You know, And if you don't, then you won't. If you go, if you just try to cram it in the hole, then it's not going to go. I mean, it might, you know, if you put enough money into something, you can buy enough ads to whatever, but like you, there's no longevity there, you know? And so like, I love that idea of just like being fully yourself, realizing that's the only way it's going to work. And it's so hard because we're constantly inundated with like what we should be, you know, what we should wear, how we should sound. I mean, that's what trends are, is like culture trying to tell us what we need to do to fit in. But like, those things don't have, that's why hymns are still getting sung every single Sunday and every single day, because they're just good. They weren't written for the charts. They were just written, and they're the most beautifully weaved words that anyone will ever write, you know? And like, that's because that was a one-to-one, God, this is because of you or for you. And we're still singing them. And I was just on Worship Circle's page, YouTube. I mean, those songs from the hymns project are still getting crazy views. And those are hymns from hundreds of years ago, you know?
What's funny for your listeners is when that project came out, y'all, I called Brian because I'm like, hey, bro, we're in trouble. Like, you understand streaming, and I've never done this before. But hey, I was like, I loaded our project into TuneCore and I forgot to check out. It's been sitting there for like 3 weeks and I thought it was good to go. And they're telling me it's not going to be available for people. I've got all our coaches posting about it. And, you know, we had this YouTube channel. We had like 30 followers. And Brian goes, man, just use YouTube. It's kind of what everybody's doing. And so it ended up just dumping all these people to our YouTube channel. And again, that's the kind of thing I'm talking about, Brian. It's like, we didn't set out to, you know that. We didn't set out to try to figure out how to get. No. In fact, most of the people who apply for Worship Circle now are from Africa. And they watch the YouTube channel. And it's like, we've got over 30 million views of different videos and all this stuff. And it started with, but we didn't set out to make a hit record. We were just like, hey, we want people to know about our mentoring community. And it's going to stay that way, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I remember sitting there in my church office and you wrote and you're like, hey, what do you think we should do? And my first thought was like, well, you've got the video, the masters, just put them on YouTube. And then, next thing you know, I remember looking, it was like, you had like thousands of subscribers, like the first day. Yeah. And I was like, I'm glad that happened, you know? And now to see, I mean, millions and millions of views. And like the whole point of it, like you just said, is now you're getting to bring people into the Worship Circle world, impact them in such an important way. And I mean, the arrangements and obviously the artists who sang the songs, it's amazing. I mean, it's so good, you know?
Yeah.
So you get to share that gift, but also for the percentage of people who kind of come back to the foundation of that. And I think it's a perfect segue to, you know, like tell people who don't know, like what is, you know, Worship Circle, if you're a worship leader, like what is it?
Man, it's a community of, it's a small group community. We meet online once a month. We actually have two sessions a month, but ministries can be a lonely place because you're expected to have it all together. You're a professional Christian. You get paid to lead others to Jesus. And I think for me, the hardest part of my life has been leading myself to Jesus. Hmm. And so to have a space where we slow down enough to be present to his presence with another group of people who are in the body who aren't connected to our staff or our volunteer community. It's just a special thing. It's like, hey, I've got this group of friends that I'm getting to know, and I can be myself around them, and I can tell them like, hey, I'm scared about this that's coming up and I don't know what to do. Can y'all pray for me? Mm-hmm. Or, hey, I've been struggling with this, but I can't talk to anybody about it because, you know, I want anonymity here. And can you guys just walk with me through it? Worship Circle is a place for doers to become beers.
Wow.
Because we're all paid to do. No one's really paying us for being. But Jesus was a beer before he was a doer. And in modern church culture, it doesn't make sense to the bean counters to say, care for your soul and your heart. Because that's not billable. Like, hey, you can't bill me for going away for half a day to sit in the woods and pray with Jesus. But those times and that margin and orienting your life around practicing his presence in a way of surrender and peace and rest fuel the times that you are in the saddle to be a doer, to be even more powerful and authentic than they were before. Mm. It's almost like, Brian, we're running so hard on the hamster wheel that we can't, you know, the wheel's gone. So remember when the hamster used to run so fast that the wheel would actually take him and flip him over because he's going so fast and he doesn't even know it.
Yeah. Like,
that's our life. And we're trying to call leaders over to say, hey, what would it look like for you to pause for 6 months and let us walk with you through just, you know, being mentored by somebody that's been in your shoes and is looking back and has some input that I think can help your heart and soul be a better husband, wife, you know, brother, sister, leader at your church. And so, man, that's what it is. And it's our joy to do it. We've mentored over 800 leaders.
Wow.
From around the world, about 20 countries so far. And it's been a joy.
Man, and I'm so, you know, proud and honored to be one of those 800 because it absolutely changed my life. And it's funny, this story just came to mind that I don't know if I ever told you this, but my first couple years of ministry, I went to the Experience Conference down in Orlando, and it was great, amazing. But throughout the conference, especially the second one, they kept saying from the stage, you know, we have like private, like basically like not counseling. It wasn't like that official.
Yeah.
It was like, if you need to talk to somebody, you know, we've got these special things set up almost similar to like Worship Circle in a smaller scale. But my second year of ministry, I was like, nothing's wrong with working at a church. Why would they need to talk to somebody? This is the funnest job ever, you know? And then the more you go, the more things happen and you realize, okay, you know, you definitely need a shoulder to cry on and a prayer. I mean, you guys, you and Scott and like my whole small group was like, got us through this into what we're doing now, you know? And like, I'm still a worship leader just as much as I was every Sunday morning, but now it's just in a kind of a different capacity. Now I'm helping equip other worship leaders with music to use on Sundays or you know, whatever the capacity is. But man, and I remember practice presence. I remember I did a Devo on that, Ministry of Presence. I said MOP. And I think about that all the time when I'm sitting there watching a kid movie for the fifth time. I'm like, it doesn't matter if I think this is, you know, I already know what's going to happen at the end of the movie. It's about sitting next to my son and daughter and Susie and just being present in the presence.
Absolutely.
You know?
Man, it's funny because I tell leaders, there's usually two reasons that, especially girls love Worship Circle. They love to be in small group. Like, hey, I get to meet some other, you know, friends and we get to talk and be prayed for. This is going to be awesome. And guys, this is, and I'm one of them, so I can say this. I always tell guys, I would not have joined Worship Circle 10 years ago.
Wow.
I would have told you to go like fly a kite. Because I was, in my mind, it was like, I don't need help. I'm at a very popular church. We've got it figured out. And why would I need somebody to help teach me? It's not about teaching you something. I started trying to, what are you going to teach me? Well, there's 12 things you can do every Sunday to make sure that you're doing is awesome. No, it's, it's just slow down, man. Like, assess your life with someone and brothers around you who you can be transparent with. And it's not until we slow down that we even know what our pulse is sometimes and know how we're doing. But the other thing so that's a barrier sometimes for guys getting in Worship Circle. The other is financial. And as you know, Brian, we have a support letter where so many leaders raise their own support to jump in. And we've seen God be faithful over and over again in that. And so many of our current leaders have done that. So, yeah, for anybody listening who's a writer who leads worship, reach out. We'd love to talk to you about it. Worshipcircle.com.
Yeah, and I'll put all those links below because I definitely, you know, I believe in the power of what Worship Circle is. So, man, I'm a permanent evangelist for it for sure.
Well, it was a joy to walk with you in that season. I just remember, I know what it's like, man. You sense God calling you to something, but what you're still on this big boat that's kind of moving in a direction, and it's easier not to try to chart your own way.
Truthfully, and I don't know. I mean, you never know, but like, I feel like without the permission and the encouragement, and just all of the time that we spent, like, I don't know if we would have been able to jump off the ship, you know, into the life raft, because it was too much, because you feel alone, you know, you're in the world where no one speaks your language at your church community, unless you have some other leaders nearby, but they're always working when you're working. So, so it's like, you just feel like you don't know what to do and where to look. And that's what Worship Circle is. It's like, it's exactly where to go and where to look. And even beyond just, I mean, yeah, I think the worship leading thing is like the common ground, but man, it was all about the time to share and like not anything tactical. It was just about like, and you know, like you said, like, we're guys, we don't need help. We'll figure it out. We're fine. But like, man, those are the moments that I remember the most, is just where everyone's just open and honest about all the tough things that we're going through.
Brian, I had a guy in my Summit small group a couple months ago, and I asked the guys to go around the group, and the question was, how's your heart? And he got to me, I got to him, and he kind of was tearing up. He goes, man, I've never had anybody ask me that.
Wow.
And those aren't the questions that you get in professional Christian world. It's like, we care about how many decisions have been made, or we care about how many people are joining the church, or we care about this.
Stats.
How are you doing? We don't have time for that. Mm. If you're not doing well, we'll find somebody else, you know?
Wow.
I've heard that from people in professional Christian circles. Like, we don't have time to deal with people who need help. So if you need help, you can get off the bus and we'll get somebody who's healthy and who can move forward. And I'm just like, man, that's not Jesus.
That's not the God math that we're talking about.
No, it's not. Yeah, you've heard this before. We can't lead anyone somewhere we haven't been, but we don't do that for the purpose of leading them. We do it because it's okay to take care of ourselves. Mm-hmm. I had a friend, a lady, I went to a Jesuit retreat center. I'm in a bit of a sabbatical season. And she said, Jesus said, the greatest command is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. The second one is like it. Love your neighbor. And then the part no one talks about, as yourself.
Mm.
And she said, Todd, you can't love your neighbor till you love yourself.
Wow.
But we go, well, I can't focus on me because that's selfish. I just need to love other people.
Oh.
And it's like, well, you can't give away what you haven't received.
Mm.
So what do you, like, take care of your soul, be present to his presence in all things, from him, through him, and to him are all things. Give thanks in all things, all situations, every day, every moment. As people are around you in that, you're going to be a lot more delightful to be with, and you're going to be able to help them do the same.
Mm.
And it's not a sin to care for your soul and your heart and to take time for yourself, because as you're refreshed and as you're coming with a tank that's got some gas in it, you're going to be able to love people way better.
Yeah, it's like something I just was thinking about with my experience with Worship Circle in general, is like, it's almost like it's a priority refresh.
Yeah.
You know, because a lot of times, I know for me, definitely the first time I felt like serious regret was my first Christmas on a church staff, because I was excited. I had all these cool plans. I wanted to do like a Christmas video with the staff. And then I wanted to put on like a citywide Christmas concert. And we did all these things, and this might sound dumb, but my daughter wasn't even 1 year old yet. And I remember coming home, and Christmas Day was like the first time I'd sat down and like watched like a Christmas movie with her. Now, she's not aware of this, but I just remember feeling this deep regret of like, I put church on top of everything because I was excited. And I felt like that's what God was calling me to do. And not to say he wasn't, but like, that's not the right order, you know? And I feel like that's what Worship Circle did for me, was like, it helped me realize, seek the Lord, like you're saying, you know, that's the first commandment. And then that's you and him. So that's not selfish, but that's just two things, you know? And then, you know, family is next, and then everything else, you know? But I feel like in the church ministry, maybe, I don't know if it's like an unseen pressure or whatever, but it's almost like God, then church, then everything else.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm a testimony. I mean, I have so many, I look back, man, and how many, you know, you think if you're in professional Christian ministry on a staff and this is what you do, your family usually you're leaving home before they're awake.
Oh yeah.
So helping your wife with the kids is just—it just didn't happen for me. Mm-mm. And church was my livelihood, so I couldn't say no. And if it was like, "Hey, we've got this thing, lead on this," or it just—it had to take precedence because it's your job. And I know there's ramifications of that that are just what they are. But I guess my warning and caution is don't look back. Take a proper assessment now and slow down long enough to assess where you are with your family. You know, be present with them, because that's huge, man. You don't get those years back. And, you know, Brian, I've been thinking a lot lately. In the world I was in, it was like we always use the term organization, like the church is an organization. I really believe the church is you. Mm. And the church is as healthy as you are.
Wow.
So if everybody believed that and was like, you know, and Christy says it all the time. She'll say it probably again at the rest retreat in a week. You know, a lot of us think that God needs us to build his church, when in actuality, he needs us to let him build us.
Hmm.
We are his church. Yeah. And so there's got to be just a pause and just a rethinking of why am I doing this? Why am I so frantic? Why am I so afraid? Fear is a big deal, especially as a guy who's a provider for his family in ministry. It's like, well, what's going to happen if I don't do this well or best, or if my stock goes down in the organization, like, how's that going to play out? And that's not from God. That's fear of man. I just love you. I love your family. And I love the fact that you trusted the Lord just to lead you in this season you're in right now. And it's been cool to watch. You know, I told my friend Eric Hill, you know, Eric's going to speak at rest, that there's so many things God's been teaching me. Gosh, we could do 5 podcasts, Brian, but the idea that worship is an awareness of God's presence in all things.
Hmm.
And I don't think that we were meant to compartmentalize our life away from Jesus. And by that, I mean, it's a joy to watch the Braves play baseball.
Hmm.
And Jesus is in that. And he's going, that's not secular. That's sacred if you make it sacred.
Wow.
And you say, Lord, I'm so grateful for this season and this weather and this ability to enjoy something that's good. And I love you, Lord. Thanks that I can experience this.
Mm.
Whether it's a meal or a sunrise or a sunset or holding your baby close, like, it's all from him, through him, and to him. Worship does not stop, and it's not just in a room on a weekend with a few songs. It's way better than that.
Yeah.
And we've all made it so small. I know I've made it small. And I think the Lord wants to invite us into the more and the bigger idea that it's all worship. It doesn't stop. It's just a matter of whether we're acknowledging every good and perfect gift.
Mm.
In all the moments, and just delighting in the fact that he delights in us giving him thanks for it all.
I heard someone say one time, you know, like a common, like, Christian cultural thing is like, yeah, I don't want to over spiritualize this, but the reality is we're spiritual beings. So you can't over spiritualize. Everything is spiritual, right?
It's all spiritual, man.
Yeah.
And I think it's the two extremes are reality and mediocrity. You know, I think we can all live in such a way where we're running from the idea of recognizing his presence in all things. And it's, man, this is my time. This is what I want to do. And we don't realize that it's a joy to invite the Lord into that reality. And we don't ever have to disconnect from him.
Yeah, man, that's so good.
The stuff that happens that's painful, it's still allowed by him and he's still good. Because at the end, we know the story, you know how it's going to end, and he's promised so much good stuff on the back end.
Man,
momentary afflictions, you know, do not compare for the weight that's coming.
Wow.
The joy is coming.
That's a good word. Man, this has been so one thing I always like to ask people is, like, what's a piece of advice that you'd give to your younger self or your current self or something along the way that just, you know, would speak to anyone listening and to encourage, because there's so many twists and turns, right? So just a piece of advice that you'd give your younger self to help anyone listening.
Man, there's so much. And I'm still so in process, Brian.
Yeah.
There's so many things. I've mastered nothing. I haven't figured out hardly anything at all. I just know that I would want to be able just to go back to remind myself of something that I've experienced in this season. Jesus, before he left, he said, go and make disciples. I'm with you always to the end of the age. And I would want to remind myself of that, that he's always with you. He doesn't leave. It's not like, whoops, you forgot about him. You were having McDonald's and man, you checked out. You were thinking about, you know, the Happy Meal toy. Gosh, man, it's almost like I tell people, you know, when you're a kid and you try to spin a basketball on your finger, it's like, oh, it's going. Oh, it fell off. Mm. And I feel like I've had that view of the Lord so much in my life that I'm thinking about you. I'm connected to you. Oh, I dropped you.
Mm.
He has me. He has you. He's not letting go. He's not leaving. He can't. He's omnipresent. He said, I'm with you always. He didn't say I'm with you until you do that stupid sin you default back to when you're in pain.
Mm.
He said, I'm with you always. I'm not leaving you, Brian. I'm not leaving you, whoever your name is. I'm with you always. And I think that's the number one thing I'm experiencing now. And that I say that to my kids and to myself. And it's such a freeing thing to go, he's got you every moment. He's not leaving.
Wow. Yeah. You know, I feel like sometimes we get stuck that God Emmanuel is only in the month of December.
I know. Man, it's way better than that. I even, you know, we've got the rest retreat coming up and I'm trying to figure out what I'm going to speak about, but it's like, there's so much on my heart right now. But one of the things for us as leaders and songwriters and everything is like, I feel like we need to repent from how small a thing we've made worship.
Mm.
We've made it into this industry and about singing songs in a room with people. And that's amazing. And it's powerful. And yes, God moves in hearts. It's not a bad thing, but I feel like he wants to say, guys, the mystery that's been revealed is Christ in you, the hope of glory. Like, I'm with you. I'm in you. I'm with you when you leave the building on Sunday, when you get up to go to work on Monday, and you can be present to my presence in all things all the time. And it's my joy to walk with you and be with you and be your comforter, to be your peace, to be the one you turn to when you don't get that job promotion or you get let go or someone passes that you love dearly. He's not going anywhere.
And so that's when we're living life to the fullest. That's the mindset, right?
Yeah.
Man, so encouraging. Well, again, thanks for taking the time to do this. And before we go, what's the best way for people to connect with you? I'll put links to Worship Circle and everything below, but like, how do you like to connect with people out there in the internet world?
Man, I'm not a major Instagrammer, but my Instagram handle is ToddFields1, the number one. And I had to do that because some guy in Texas, I can't get in touch with him and get my name, but I did get Twitter. So I've got Todd Fields, you know, it's at Todd Fields, and then Facebook, it's just Todd Fields, but you can connect with me personally that way. Worship Circle is worshipcircle.com. There's a program linked on there, Rest Retreat. You can sign up for the summit, which we have twice a year, which is a taste of Worship Circle if you just want to try it out.
Mm.
So man, those are all the ways, and I'd love to, you know, answer any questions anybody has. If they reach out, I'm available.
Cool. And then with the new album, is that something that's going to be 2022? Like, is there any kind of release date or that's still up in the air?
Yeah. Our goal, Nathan Knuckles and our goal is to get it out before Christmas. So,
okay.
I think we'll get there.
Perfect. Okay. Yeah. So all of you put your Spotify link below. That way people can be ready for that as well. Cause that's exciting, man.
Yeah, man. I'm excited too. It's been a long time.
Yeah. Well, before we go, I would love to pray for you. And thanks for being here. So God, thank you so much for Todd. Thank you so much for all the amazing things that he's been doing through his different seasons of ministry and still just seeking after you more closely now than ever, God. He's got the priorities, you know, straight with you and family and then kind of everything else, God. But it's exciting to see all the lives. I mean, 800 leaders, that's an incredible amount to think of. And we've been talking about your math the 800 mm-hmm. and 800 circles, 800 worship circles out there that are all kind of impacting people for you, God. So what an amazing gift that is. And then to pray special blessing over this new music coming out, that it would reach people in ways beyond even imaginable, because it's all about the truth and the honesty that of Todd's experience, God, that people will definitely resonate with. So mm-hmm. I'm personally excited to see that. And God, just breathe your life into it, God. It's like Andy Rosier said from Vertical Church, it's our job as songwriters to build the boat, but you put the wind in the sails. So I pray that you put a mighty breath in those sails, God. In your name we pray, amen.
Amen.
We want to help reach as many Christian indie artists and songwriters as possible. And one way we can do that is with your help. So if you could take a minute and leave us a review on iTunes, that would be so appreciated. This is how the iTunes algorithm will push this content out to more and more Christian indie artists and songwriters. So like I said, if you could just take a couple seconds, leave us a review, that would be so awesome. It means so much to us, and we would really appreciate it.